WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick.
David?
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Just swell. Everything in the world is going perfectly.
Yes. It's our dream world.
Yeah.
That's Mirav Mikhaeli, a Labor Party member of the Israeli parliament. And if she's sarcastic about the state of things today, it's because being a liberal in Israel these days isn't any easier than being a liberal in the United States or Europe. The way political trends are going in Israel, the hardliners, people like the defense minister Avigdor Lieberman, are beside themselves.
You're probably aware of the fact that when you ask Avigdor Lieberman how he is, he always says, heaven.
Oh, God.
One of the things that has pleased the right in Israel so much is the changing of the guard in the United States. The Obama administration's ambition to make peace failed miserably. We've got to acknowledge that. The relation between the two countries is at an all-time low, and the nuclear treaty with Iran enraged the Israeli government further. By the end, Obama and Netanyahu could hardly stand each other. Donald Trump, on the other hand, is sending to Israel as an ambassador a man after Benjamin Netanyahu's own ideological heart, maybe even more right-wing. David Friedman is a lawyer who raised money for the settlements in the West Bank, and he's against any concessions at all to the Palestinians. He's called a liberal Zionist group in the United States worse than the capos in the concentration camps, the Jews who were forced to work for the Nazis in places like Auschwitz. The status quo in Israel is just fine by him. Now, I've been writing about that part of the world for a very long time, since the high water mark of the Oslo Peace Accords, and it seems to me, after so many failed attempts at negotiation, so much violence, so much terrorism, incitement, so much distrust and repression and uprising, that we've reached a point now that's called a frozen conflict. John Kerry, in one of his last acts as Obama's Secretary of State, issued a dark warning about what it all means.
Today there are a similar number of Jews and Palestinians living between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. They have a choice. They can choose to live together in one state, or they can separate into two states. But here is a fundamental reality. If the choice is one state, Israel can either be Jewish or democratic. It cannot be both. And it won't ever really be at peace. Moreover, the Palestinians will never fully realize their vast potential in a homeland of their own with a one-state solution.
Today we're going to get three perspectives on the prospects for a two-state solution. Is it dead, or is it just on ice? I'll talk with a liberal member of the Israeli parliament, a Palestinian pollster, and an Israeli diplomat, Benjamin Netanyahu's man in New York. Now let's rewind for a second. For 50 years now, Israel has faced the question about what to do with the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem. territory it seized from its neighbors in the Six-Day War of 1967. Territories that are tactically important, but also have biblical and political significance for so many. For much of that time, the official goal for a peace settlement has been the two-state solution, meaning a sovereign, demilitarized state for the Palestinian Arabs, with guarantees of recognition and lasting security for Israel. At the same time, Israelis have also built communities throughout the West Bank. Now, to some extent, it's the same spirit that Americans build suburbs. More room, cheaper housing. But many settlers see the West Bank, which they call Judea and Samaria, as promised to them by God. It's theirs, and that's what makes it so charged. And what's more, they build settlements precisely to make a Palestinian state almost impossible to imagine. And in recent years, it's the settlers who have set the dominant tone of politics in Israel. Every politician on the right must pay tribute to their myths, their status as pioneers. Danny Dayan is the Israeli Consul General in New York. But before he came here, he was a settler himself in the West Bank. In fact, he was a leader of the settler movement. Back in the late 80s, Dayan had given up a comfortable life in Tel Aviv, the center of modern secular Israel.
In Tel Aviv, we enjoyed the cultural scene in Tel Aviv, the shopping, the gastronomic scene in Tel Aviv. Your radio audience cannot see that the effects it has on my in my body. But we thought that the right thing to do is to move to Samaria.
When you say the right thing to do, politically?
Politically, ideologically.
Why?
Because Israelis in that area were suffering the terrorist attacks of the first Intifada. The Palestinians were rejecting any reasonable solution to the conflict. And we thought that we have to strengthen Israel's presence there.
If you talk to Israelis and Palestinians, you quickly discover that both sides cleave to radically different narratives of history, both ancient and recent. The Israeli narrative is one of ancient possession of the land and the right to a homeland in a hostile world. The Palestinian narrative is one of colonial expulsion, displacement, and humiliation. For someone like Dayan, a settler, the reason for the ongoing conflict is absolutely clear and beyond question.
Look, David, as long as the Palestinians do not recognize the right of Israel to exist, not just its de facto existence, but the right of Israel, of a Jewish state in that part of the world to exist, it's inevitable that they will try again and again. Because if you think it's the very existence of Israel is unjust, then of course you will do any effort to put it to an end. They have to recognize the reason, the right of Israel as a Jewish state to exist. Only when that happens, there is a chance that day the peace process will start.
Do you think the Obama administration and a lot of liberal Zionist Jews in the United States are naive about the state of affairs in Israel today? It seems to me that more and more people are saying there will be one state and one state only, that Oslo, that two states and all the rest is dead.
Well, I reject the idea that the only option to two states is one state. I think that we have to be much more innovative. We need much more, I would say, out-of-the-box thinking. Maybe we'll have to engage, I would say, in political architecture and try to design a kind of political structure that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world, that will be as peculiar, as peculiar a solution as this conflict is peculiar.
But what you call peculiar seems to be a recipe for injustice.
No, why? Why? No, I don't agree with that.
Because if you're going to maintain a Jewish democratic state, it's going to be very hard for it to be Jewish, considering demographic trends over the
Again,
long run.
David, you are suggesting that the only option to the two states is one state. But there are other options we have to think, for instance, in terms of functional compromise instead of territorial compromise.
What does that mean?
I don't know exactly, but we have to start. What we need desperately in this conflict is fresh thinking, is to put aside all the...
But when I hear the fresh thinking from somebody like Naftali Bennett, who's to the right of Netanyahu, but an extremely powerful voice with a lot of support from the settlers, which is the kind of victor's ethos in Israeli politics today, what I'm hearing is the voice of annexation, proper annexation.
Well, now you are hearing me, and I think that, as I said, the solution to the conflict doesn't lie with neither at this stage in two states or one state.
Isn't it clear that Prime Minister Netanyahu, despite some earlier statements, will refuse to negotiate the establishment of any Palestinian state? Isn't it clear that he has no intention whatsoever of altering the status quo unless he decides in the end to make it even more draconian?
His position is to this very day, his sincere, his genuine position is that if a demilitarized Palestinian state recognizes the right of Israel to exist and there are proper security arrangements, that should be the way to solve the conflict.
And let's say that did happen. Could you see a scenario in which the settlements, and there are a lot of them in the West Bank, do you think those people would get up and leave, or would it require enormous violence and upheaval and police action to get them to come home?
Well, if that happens, as that's a very big if, as I said, I am very skeptical if that will happen because of the Palestinian positions, I think there is a third option. They can stay if they want as residents of the Palestinian state. Look, imagine, David, if Nelson Mandela would have said, I want majority rule in South Africa and to expel all the white residents of South Africa. I want a South Africa without any white presence.
I don't see any Mandelas on the scene.
No, but in that's exactly what I am saying.
On the Israeli side, no, included.
I see many Mandelas in Israeli side. I don't see any Mandela in the Palestinian side.
Who are the Mandelas
side?
on the Israeli side?
I don't know.
Tell me one.
No, Mandela was a very special person. We are not doing in characterizing now Israeli leaders, but the equivalent here
but isn't this one of the
David,
problems
that they
isn't
could,
there
no,
a,
no,
isn't,
but,
wait 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 isn't there a poverty no. of Israeli political leadership
no.
as much as there is anywhere else?
What we need is a Mandela in the Palestinian side. We need a Mandela in the Palestinian side that will say, okay, we can coexist with a ethnic minority of Jews in the state of Palestine, but they say exactly the contrary. And you know, in the 21st century, if you see an aspiring state that says we cannot assimilate, as Israel does, for instance, an ethnic minority, then it's a big question if they are mature enough to have sovereignty.
You wrote an op-ed for the New York Times a couple of years ago calling for peaceful non-reconciliation between Israel and the West Bank, what you called Judea and Samaria. What is that, and was it ever implemented? What stopped it?
Back in 2014, I said that since reconciliation is not possible right now because of the Palestinian attitude towards the right of Israel to exist, then let's opt for the second best. And the second best is to try to live as normally as possible under the abnormal conditions of non-reconciliation. And I called, for instance, for the rehabilitation of refugee camps without any strings attached, asking the Palestinians to renounce what they call the claim of return. Or, for instance, I will give you one example. Maybe it will explain it best. I don't understand why a Palestinian software engineer from Ramallah has to emigrate to Dubai to find a proper job when Tel Aviv or Jerusalem can offer lots of vacancies. That doesn't mean peace. That means that we have to strive to live as normally as possible until peace arrives. Because, as I said, I am quite pessimistic about the date of arrival of the final status agreement.
Everywhere you look, pessimism and resignation.
You go to the checkpoints in the territories and you see people subjected to daily humiliations. The barbed wire, the walls. The disconnection between Palestinian towns is as if Gaza were 1,000 miles from Nablus and Jenin on the West Bank. There's just no way of escaping the daily feeling of gloom.
There's no doubt that the mood among the Palestinians is highly pessimistic.
I reached Khalil Shikaki in Ramallah, on the West Bank, by Skype. Shikaki runs the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research, and that gives him a unique view of public opinion in the Palestinian territories, and in Israel as well. Shikaki agrees with John Kerry. There's just been too many wrenches thrown into the machinery of the peace process at this point.
The perception is that the Israelis, by building settlements, have made the two-state solution no longer viable, no longer practical, and that the Palestinians do not have the means to force the Israelis to do that, and that the international community either does not care or does not have the capacity to or the willingness to pressure the Israelis. Having said that, I would still say that I don't think that we've reached a point of no return.
So you believe that despite the rhetoric, and let's stick to the Palestinian side for the moment, you believe that despite the rhetoric that we hear, in whether it's on the street or in various political factions, that a two-state solution could not only happen, that it could hold, that it could be secure, that it could be peaceful, even in that incredibly volatile neighborhood of the Middle East.
I'll tell you something. Even in the midst of this pessimism that is currently prevailing, when we ask Palestinians, what is your most fundamental goal? The Palestinian state is selected by almost half of all Palestinians immediately. So, in other words, when you ask people to think about their interests, the question of statehood comes up almost immediately. And the next thing that comes after it is way, way behind it. That's very clear that for most Palestinians, this notion of independence and sovereignty and self-determination is a deeply rooted interest that is very, very difficult for it to go away.
In other words, for all the rhetoric directed against Israel, for all the resentment, all the lost hope and rage, Shikaki thinks most Palestinians would still take a pragmatic choice of accepting Israel in order to gain their own statehood and security. What does your polling show that the Israelis and the Palestinians see as their options?
Well, about half on both sides support a two-state solution. Sometimes a little bit more here, a little bit there. About a third of the Palestinians support a one-state solution.
And that means what to them? Well, one-state solution means what?
Basically, equal political and civil rights in one state, two communities, but one single state, Jews of Palestine, of Israel, and Palestinians of Palestine, Israel, including Israeli Arabs, in other words, would all live in one single state. Basically, the South African model. The South African model.
A post-apartheid South Africa.
Absolutely. Okay. Yes, indeed.
Now, the people who object to a one-state solution say, "Yeah, that's the solution." Sounds like Bosnia. In other words, it's a solution that will end up in inevitable conflict. Do you agree?
I tend to agree with that, yes. I don't see the one-state solution as viable. I think a lot of Palestinians turn to that out of the conviction that the two-state solution is no longer viable and that the future is a one-state reality and that this one-state reality, whether we like it or not, is here to stay because Israel is becoming more right-wing and will not agree to grant Palestinians freedom and independence and so on. And that, therefore, all we have to do is just wait 5-10 more years, and the reality on the ground will be visible to everyone to see. The whole international community and the Israelis themselves will see that what they have created is a system of apartheid throughout the West Bank, and that this system is not tenable.
Now, this is a little complicated. What he's saying is that a lot of Palestinians think things might well get worse before they get better. In this way of thinking, annexation by Israel would put them under a system of unambiguous apartheid. And that would be so bad that Israel, like South Africa, would over time and under great international pressure feel isolated and finally yield to a more just form of government for both peoples. Well, you wrote a study called Sliding Toward a One-State Reality. Isn't the one-state reality already in place?
We are sliding in that direction. And yes, there are elements of that reality on the ground. But I think the point about this one-state reality is, when do you reach a point of no return? I do not believe we have reached a point of no return. And I think we still have time to put this two-state solution together.
Mirov, is the two-state solution absolutely dead in your mind?
Oh, no. Oh, so no.
Back to Mirov Mikhaili, the former journalist and member of the parliament in the center-left Labour Party. The Labour Party has not given up on the two-state solution, although, to be honest, most members are just not talking much about it at all.
The two-state solution is so possible, and there are so many partners who can make it possible. Yes, it's going to be much more complicated than it was 10 and 20 and 30 and, of course, 50 years ago, but it doesn't mean that it's impossible. The forces who are against the two-state solution are much louder and much more powerful these days, but there is still a huge part of both Israeli public and Palestinian public who believes that this is the solution. And still to this day, if you count fingers in Israeli parliament, there still is a majority for an agreement within the parliament. Once we have in the chair of the prime minister in Israel political will to act out the two-state solution, to make it happen, it can be done. So,
now, you say that
a
slight majority on both sides is still for a two-state solution, but you know at the same time those same polls say...
It's not even so slight, that's what I'd say. But it's not even so slight.
But the same polls will say an even bigger majority on both sides say that we don't have a partner for peace and that the conditions are not ripe and that neither side trusts the other. You know, we've run around this maypole for years and years. But that faith seems to be disintegrating all the time.
I couldn't agree more. And I think the people who feel that and think that are right to feel that and to think that, because this would be their experience. I mean, if you think of the population on both sides, I think there are many more people who were born only into a reality of failures in that sense. Different kinds of peace processes and roads of maps who have constantly and repeatedly failed. So, of course, they should feel like that. But that doesn't mean that you can't change the way they feel and that you can't change the way they think.
Now, the leadership that's pro two-state solution seems, at least from a distance, awfully weak. We're talking about a Labour Party, the inheritance of the Labour Party led by Isaac Herzog, who does not seem like a powerful presence on the Israeli political scene. Am I wrong?
Unfortunately, you're not very wrong. It's true. It's not only about the personalities, it's also about the narrative. Our narrative that was the two-state solution with a partner, with really good prospects for peace and security and peace, is lost a lot because some of our center-left leaders have come and said there is no partner. Once they have said it, we lost our narrative, and it's very, very difficult for us to gain our own confidence in this. But the truth of the matter, as a member of the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee and the subcommittees, I can tell you that it still is possible, that it's totally possible and achievable if only we have the political will for it.
A final question, and it's this, and it's blunt, and I think
I think I know where you'll go with this, but has liberal Zionism died and has religious nationalism won in Israel?
Well, that's very funny that you should ask this. The short answer is no, not at all. But it's a cultural thing. We think of everything as if it was a Hollywood feature, as if it ends, you know, and after an hour and a half. Well, this is not how life is. After the end of the feature, life continues. So even if this act, they have their hand up, you know, and they are winning in this act, it doesn't mean that they're going to win after the subtitles go up.
I think Merav Mikaeli is right. History doesn't end. It doesn't lock into place. Things can shift in the most unlikely ways. Look at our own country. For the moment, at least, all the major factors, the dominance of the right in Israel and the United States, the chaos of Palestinian politics, the ominous state of the larger Middle East, all of that makes it harder to be an optimist with every passing day. There's no point now being nostalgic for the peace process as it was in the 90s. This is a conflict that's been going on for fully a century, and it's not going to end anytime soon. But with the future of so many people at stake, Israelis as well as Palestinians, not to mention the ramifications for the United States, the region, and the world, despair shouldn't be an option for any of us. I'm David Remnick. Still ahead today, a new look at the life of the great poet Elizabeth Bishop and a new album from the rap duo Run the Jewels. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour.
WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information.